Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The bad housing news was coming so thick and fast today, you almost couldn't keep up. Pending home sales are down. The big mortgage banker Countrywide was reported to be near bankruptcy. The head of Fannie Mae said it's going to be 2010 before real estate turns around. The good news is that Henry Paulson has started paying attention. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Lenovo, official computer partner of the Olympic Games. Lenovo dedicates 1% of income to support entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Good to have you here on this Tuesday. It is the 8th of January, and we begin today where we began 24 hours ago with the Bush administration and the economy. The president said once again today he is considering, quote, all options as he thinks about some kind of economic stimulus package. White House staffers say we probably won't hear any more specifics until the State of the Union speech at the end of the month. But Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson gave a sneak peek today. He said the Bush administration is thinking about expanding a program currently aimed at subprime borrowers. The secretary says homeowners with conventional or what are called prime mortgages might need some help as well. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports now from Washington.
So far, the government's program to deal with the housing crisis, called Hope Now, has focused only on some 1.8 million mortgage holders struggling with subprime adjustable-rate loans. The program encourages lenders to either refinance mortgages or freeze the interest rates. But now the administration is considering help for many more homeowners with conventional or prime adjustable-rate mortgages. For Tom LaMalfa of the mortgage research company Wholesale Access, the Treasury Secretary's proposal is an ominous sign.
Secretary Paulson's suggestion indicates how rattled, how concerned both he and the administration are over the likelihood that the economy is headed into a serious recession, a stem winder probably like we haven't had since the early 1980s.
The Treasury Department won't say how many prime mortgage holders may need help. Currently, just over a million prime-rate borrowers with both adjustable or fixed mortgages are 30 days or more behind on their mortgage payments. Hope Now's executive director, Faith Schultz, wouldn't comment on how big the program may ultimately become, but she says the mortgage help is the same whether it's for prime or subprime borrowers.
If we cover most of the subprime market, some of these practices and principles could, in effect, help the broader market as well.
Schultz says any borrowers having trouble making their monthly payments should get in touch with their mortgage provider to try to work out more favorable terms. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Congress is making its displeasure with the Federal Communications Commission known. John Dingell of Michigan chairs the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He sent a letter to FCC Chairman Kevin Martin today, announcing an investigation into some of the commission's recent decisions. 3 weeks ago, Martin engineered a controversial vote to expand the limits on media ownership. The cable company Comcast made a big splash today at the Consumer Electronics Show going on in Las Vegas. It's getting into the high-definition video-on-demand business. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
So, you bought a gazillion-inch high-definition TV over the holidays, and now you're finding out it takes a bazillion years to download a high-def movie? Well, today in Vegas, Comcast announced it was rolling the dice on a new type of wideband technology. It lets you download an HD copy of a 2.5-hour movie like Batman Begins in 4 minutes, rather than the 6 hours it takes on standard broadband. Holy high speed!
They're really trying to bulk it up, deliver video quicker, deliver more video.
That's Michael Green of Jupiter Research. Comcast is trying to bulk up its service because Verizon has been nipping at its heels. James McQuivey of Forrester Research says Comcast's wideband technology now beats Verizon and makes satellite TV look positively prehistoric.
The satellite players have been trying to scramble, and I think today they're probably huddling around their conference room tables to say, what can we really do to compete with an ultra-high-speed internet connection?
Michael Green says Comcast will also try to match Apple in offering movies and TV shows over the internet, but Apple may have the upper hand.
Apple has extensive experience building this kind of store. They've been clearly successful with music, and ultimately we can see who builds a better user experience.
Some Comcast customers will experience the wideband technology right away, but it's not clear how much it'll cost. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
We might be getting into better times for video-on-demand fans if this year's electronics show is any guide. There's Comcast, as Nancy just told us, and Microsoft announced a content distribution deal with some of the major studios this weekend. Matthew Garahan covers technology for the Financial Times. And Matthew, you say it's not just Microsoft, but perhaps Apple, too, that's getting into the video-on-demand business?
That's right, yeah. Apple has been having talks with pretty much everybody in Hollywood about signing up content and being able to sell it, and then also rent that content on from iTunes. Now, the Macworld trade show starts in a week or so, and we understand that they will be announcing a video-on-demand deal with 20th Century Fox. And they've also been talking to Sony and to Warner Brothers, Paramount, as well as Disney, who are an existing partner, about joining that service.
Now, will this be a typical Steve Jobs Macworld extravaganza? He'll stand up there in the black turtleneck and make a big splash?
I guess so. But Hollywood's quite a leaky place, and I think it's been hard to keep this one under wraps. Also, the studios have lots of concerns, and I don't think all of those concerns have yet been met by Apple. I mean, they're concerned about pricing, they're concerned about piracy.
Let's take those concerns in sequence. First of all, piracy. Aren't these studios still incredibly worried about content getting out there and then somebody basically hooking up some kind of hard drive and moving that content around without paying a dime?
They are. They're very worried. They've obviously seen what happened with the music industry, and they're very keen to avoid that happening to them. So, in talking to Apple, they've been wanting to make sure that Apple can guarantee that there'll be various restrictions in place to stop you from making multiple copies of the movie that you download, that you rent, or that you buy. Because once that movie's out in the internet space, it becomes very easy for people to watch it illegally, and that obviously hits the revenues and the bottom lines of the studios.
What about the price point question? One of the beauties, maybe the beauty of iTunes, is that you want a song, you pay 99 cents for it, and boom, you're done. How's that going to translate into the movie space there?
Well, it's been the big sticking point, and is why we haven't seen more studios join Disney on the iTunes platform. The big issue is scaring off the big retail partners the studios have, like Walmart, where they have big, substantial DVD businesses, and they sell these DVDs in these stores. And if you put movies on the internet and charge less for them than they cost in the stores, then you're obviously going to undermine that business. And that's been a big concern. So one of the other things we hear about Macworld is that there's going to be some kind of movement on price, so that there might be an increase in price. How consumers are going to react to that, I don't know, but I think it'll satisfy the studios to an extent that they're not going to be hurting their retail DVD businesses.
Now to the end user, the consumer question here. How long will it be before, either with Microsoft or Apple, I can sit on my living room couch and watch what I want when I want? I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow with these guys, is it?
Well, you can kind of do it now, but it's not the smoothest experience because it takes time to download. It's, because of the bandwidth restrictions, you can't just turn on your iTunes and, hey, presto, there's the movie. You've got to wait a while. But it's getting there, and I think within the next year or two, download speeds will fall, will decline. And that's been one of the big themes at the Consumer Electronics Show, is how do you make the bridge? How do you bridge the gap between the internet space and what you watch on your television? So I think we're almost there.
Matthew Garahan covers technology for the Financial Times. We reached him at the Consumer Electronics Show up in Las Vegas. Matthew, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Allow me to point out that the NASDAQ is now 0 for 2008, 8 straight down days in a row. The Dow is off almost 5% so far this year. We'll have the details and what I'm sure will be the sad music when we do the numbers. NBC is starting to tally up the damage from yesterday's cancellation of the Golden Globes awards ceremony. Ad Age reported this afternoon the network's getting ready to give back as much as $10 to $15 million to advertisers whose spots are never going to see the light of day. The Globes telecast had been scheduled for NBC for Sunday night. It is now the first tangible casualty of the writer's strike. David Carr covers Hollywood for the New York Times, and he says there's going to be plenty of collateral damage.
When it comes to being among the chosen, money is no object, and they spend like pirates, and nobody's going to be in that festive move splashing money all around. So everybody from bellhops to bartenders in Los Angeles is going to be feeling it.
There is a consolation prize for those who will take home one of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association trophies. The winners will be announced at a press conference. Nice, but not exactly something to get all gussied up for.
I think it's a huge, huge, huge hit.
Alan Schwartz is the designer for the label ABS. He's usually one of the first to market with imitations of all those red carpet dresses we usually see.
It's tremendous exposure for the type of style that's on trend. That's what I mean. The exposure is immeasurable.
But florists and tailors and hairstylists all get business from the awards, too. Katia Marson works at Jose Ebert. That's a salon up in Beverly Hills. She's been doing Hollywood hair for more than 22 years.
One of my producer clients came in, she was like, can you believe it? You know, everyone's in shock. Wow, it's canceled.
Marson doesn't just do the big names. She handles directors and producers, their spouses, and all the other people who love the glitz and get done up. Parties and galas go on all throughout the night, and so, I guess, does the styling.
Some people, realizing that we're open, want to come in and say, oh, I'm having a big party, you know, can I get my hair done too?
Clock's ticking for the Oscar parties. They're scheduled for February the 24th. Ad Age says ABC could be looking at advertising givebacks of maybe $80 million if they're canceled. Mike Huckabee might not win the primary in New Hampshire today, but the former governor of Arkansas is still in pretty good spot. The most recent USA Today Gallup poll has him in first place among Republican primary voters nationally. Commentator Len Berman says that makes him wonder how many people have heard about Huckabee's tax plan.
Mike Huckabee is right that our tax system badly needs reform, but his proposed plan, the fair tax, would be a disaster. Sure, the fair tax sounds great. Dump all current federal taxes. Abolish the IRS and replace them with a simple 23% national sales tax. Every household would get an annual prebate, free money to help them handle the tax. Only problem is that it really is just too good to be true. First, there's fuzzy math. Say you buy something for $10 and $3 is added to the price. That sounds like a 30% sales tax. But fair tax promoters say that $3 is only 23% of the final price of $13. Yeah, sure. And the 30% tax rate wouldn't come close to paying for current government services. Fair taxers assume that the government will pay sales tax on everything it buys. But unless Lockheed Martin just eats the $9 million tax on a $30 million fighter jet, the extra cost will just be passed on to the taxpayers. In fact, everything government buys would cost more. And states certainly wouldn't just roll over and let the federal government tack 30% onto all their purchases. Tax rates this high invite cheating. A whole new underground economy would appear overnight. Why pay 30% tax on an item that you can get on the black market tax-free? And the tax would hammer the middle class. Think about it. The prebate protects those with low incomes. People with high incomes only spend a fraction of their income, so they get a huge tax cut. But middle-class people end up holding the bag. The president's tax reform panel estimated that replacing just the federal income tax with the national sales tax would boost middle-income tax bills by $5,000, and that's after the prebate. The fair tax isn't fair. It isn't even feasible. Let's move on to real tax reform ideas.
Len Berman is a senior fellow at the Urban Institute. He's the director of the Tax Policy Center there. You can send us your thoughts online. Our website is marketplace.org. Forget Wall Street's subprime worries for just a second. Instead, turn your banking attention with me now to the Middle East. There is a brand new bank there. Noor Islamic Bank opened its doors this weekend. It's half owned by the government of Dubai. And today, its chief executive announced he's going on a multi-billion dollar spending spree. He wants to corner the market on lending to the world's 1.8 billion Muslims. Marketplace's Joe Barshe has that story.
Noor Islamic Bank has global ambitions for Islamic banking, but it's still a niche business. Mahmoud El Gamal is the chair of Islamic economics, finance, and management at Rice University. He says businessmen see Islamic banking as another way to mop up some of the petrodollars sloshing around the region.
Every financial institution and every multinational corporation wants to get a piece of that action, and if that gives you a competitive advantage to say that you are also going to structure your finance through Sharia-compliant means, then so be it.
El Gamal says banks like Noor have found a way around the Sharia prohibition on charging interest. They charge markups or rents instead. Khalid Hauladar is an Islamic finance analyst with Moody's Investors Service. He says Noor already has a lot of competition in Dubai.
You also have the HSBCs, the Standard Charters, the Citigroups that are there, and they're also opening their own Islamic windows, as they call them, which is like a subsidiary of the overall group that in turn tries to conduct its business in a ethically Islamic way.
Hauladar says to compete, Noor will need lots of customers to achieve economies of scale. One way to do it, he says, is to target populous Muslim countries that are underserved, such as Pakistan and Indonesia. Noor won't find it easy, Hauladar says, but its owner, the Dubai government, has deep pockets. The bank says it will grow by snapping up institutions and converting them to Sharia law. In New York, I'm Jill Barshe for Marketplace.
Coming up, catering to China's jet set.
By example, they're arriving in Paris, they want to go to Cannes, then to Geneva, then they have an appointment in Spain or in Portugal.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials lost 238 points today, 1.8% to close at 12,589. Mostly bad news in the housing and telecom sectors there. The Nasdaq plunged 2.3%, 58 points to end at 2440. The broader S&P 500 staggered down 1.8%, 25 points to finish the day at 1390. Countrywide Financial crumbled 28% as the company denied those bankruptcy rumors we mentioned earlier. KB Home dropped 9% after it posted a disappointing quarterly loss. AT&T rang up a 4.5% loss after company officials said they're facing softness in their domestic business. In Europe, London's FTSE ticked up 0.3%. France's CAC 40 added 0.9%. The German DAX gained 0.5%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 3.77%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Angie's List, providing thousands of reports on local service companies. These reports come directly from the experiences of the members themselves. AngiesList.com. Marketplace aims to be insightful and provocative. And if you send our stories along, you can be too. Log on to our website and forward any story you hear. Every day's rundown is there, along with transcripts of the show and links to individual pieces. It's at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Wednesday. President Bush arrives in Israel. He's scheduled to meet with both the Israeli president and the prime minister at their residences in Jerusalem. World Watch Institute releases its annual report on the state of the world. Some of the topics covered include cap-and-trade carbon markets and microfinance for the poor. And folk singer Joan Baez celebrates her birthday. She'll be 67. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
The first listener letter of 2008 comes from physician Dan Johnson down in San Diego, California. He thought our commentary on the high cost of treating chronic diseases put the blame in the wrong place. Dr. Johnson says people rely too heavily on specialists and not enough on the family doctor.
As long as insurance payers and the federal government continue to reward specialists for procedures and interventions and forget about preventative medicine, our country will continue to play catch-up when it comes to healthcare spending.
Another commentary, this time about immigration, irritated more than a couple of you. Christine Widgren was one of many listeners who felt that we left out a very important word when characterizing the nation's attitude toward immigrants.
I know of no voters or politicians who have opinions or positions against immigrants. There are citizens and politicians who are against immigrants who entered the United States illegally. There is a big, big difference.
Our piece yesterday about gadgets for your car got one listener thinking. Michael Pettengill is that listener. He lives in Merrimack, New Hampshire.
I have to ask, is anyone looking at cars that get me around without having to buy gas or spend a lot of money just to travel a dozen miles every once in a while? Should I be looking to Google or Microsoft or Apple for my next transportation vehicle?
Every once in a while, we get something flat wrong on this program. Bill Jechik wrote to say an interview last week about the proliferation of college football bowl games left a couple of wrong impressions.
The first one was that teams with a losing record qualified for bowl games. That is not true, although it is true that a couple teams had a losing record overall after losing their bowl game.
Case in point, Colorado was 6-6 before its appearance in the Independence Bowl. It ended up with a losing record after it lost there to Alabama. One other thing I ought to mention about that interview, intercollegiate women's tiddlywinks don't exist. Of course, it was a joke. It was a joke that didn't work, but it was a joke. And finally, for those who somehow missed it when it aired last month. I'm a cowboy on a steel horse ride. Wanted.
You got it. Take it, Kai. Take it.
Dead or alive. Oh, man, that was me trying and failing at the video game Rock Band. A lot of people wrote in to say they enjoyed that piece, and I thank them for that. Every single one of them, though, agreed I ought to keep my day job. If you want to critique me or something else you hear on the program, write to us. Our website is marketplace.org. I cannot believe you guys convinced me to put that piece back on the radio. Today, the International Monetary Fund cut its estimate of global economic growth for the year that just ended. Not by much. Worldwide gross domestic product was still close to 5% growth. China drove a good chunk of that. Its economy is running flat out, which is creating a lot of wealth there. The number of Chinese millionaires has doubled in just 6 years to 300,000 of them. There are 106 billionaires in China. And for those with a fistful of dollars, there are plenty of people to show them how to spend it. Marketplace's Scott Tong took a trip to a trade fair featuring the finer things.
The point of the VIP weekend is to give China's nouveau riche a taste of the good life. That is as defined by the sponsors of the weekend, companies selling cigars, cognac, and sports cars, trying to cash in on the world's number three luxury goods market.
China, booming, and we want to know where all these rich people are hiding.
Generally, what kind of people are here?
Mainly those people... Rich people, of course.
In China today, there is a lot of money flowing around.
These rich people are here, and there we are to teach them how to spend their money.
These people include property developers, nightclub owners, and bankers. They're all in Hunan province, inside a European-style chateau on the grounds of the air conditioning company called Broad. The founder is Zhang Yue, millionaire. He owns a mansion and a jet.
We have a very serious problem. China's rich people today don't understand the good life because they've worked so long. They have no refined experiences.
Refined, he says. Here, two women in leopard print bump and grind to Britney Spears. Zhang is a corporate jet evangelist. He bought China's first ever a few years back. Exhibitor Richard Koku of Global Jet explains a private plane is a must-have for today's globe-trotting Chinese executive.
By example, they're arriving in Paris, they want to go to Cannes, then to Geneva, then they have an appointment in Spain or in Portugal. So it's very easy for the private jet.
Want to smooth out that flight? Hit the Martel Cognac station, $300 a bottle. It's $6,000 for their Glashütte original watch wrapped around the wrist of this model. She's sashaying. If there's a dominant theme here, it's European brands.
The Hermes, the Cartier, the Zegna.
That's luxury magazine publisher Olivier Berlot. In just about any conversation, he transitions seamlessly from fashion to yachting to wine, giving life tips along the way.
Especially we had a Margaux 94, a Chateau Ferrière.
It may seem over the top for this nominally socialist country, where the annual income per capita is $2,000. But billionaire property developer Wang Shi says the party officially embraced entrepreneurs 6 years ago.
The party does not only represent the workers and the farmers, it also represents intellectuals and capitalists.
And fellow capitalist Jason Fan says, what's wrong with us living a little? Just a generation ago, virtually everyone in China was dirt poor.
30 years ago, your dream is to own a bicycle. 20 years ago, your dream is to own a motorcycle. And 10 years ago, your dream is to own a car. Today, your dream is to own a private jet.
Still, spending freely on imported goods doesn't necessarily come easily to many Chinese who have spent a lifetime being frugal. Market researcher Paul French says luxury retailers may think they can just take their success in Japan and copy it and paste it in China.
A lot of us don't believe that for the very simple reason that if China historically always followed Japan, then everyone here would be a Zen Buddhist and women would wear the kimono and we'd all eat sushi every day.
Still, some items, like luxury cars, move almost as quickly as iPods the day before Christmas. The sports car test drive yielded this interested party. This property developer wants to pick up a Jaguar for his wife, the red one, $90,000. It's a good price, he says, not too high. I don't want to be too showy. In Hunan, southern China, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of a well-diversified college savings plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note as we wrap things up today. Doing business in Venezuela has been one big headache of late for foreign oil companies. Last year, President Hugo Chavez took control of several large oil projects away from companies like Chevron and Royal Dutch Shell. Today, he increased the pressure. The state oil company said foreign oil firms have to pay up faster. They used to have 30 days to make their payments. Now it is just 8. Does some damage to bookkeeping, as you might imagine. Venezuela was said to have been motivated in part by the decline in the value of the U.S. dollar. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Tuesday. Today, the Dow declined 238 points, 1.8%. The NASDAQ fell 58 points, 2.3%. The S&P 500 gave up 25 points. That's about 0.8%. We are back in stock market correction territory, if you're keeping track. Thanks to Renita Jablonski and Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by John Buckley. Coming up next time on this program, dialing in a long-distance diagnosis.
We're sitting here in Sacramento, California, and we're monitoring a hospital that's 425 miles away. There is nothing but cows and one stoplight. And we're helping these people.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.